It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Wes Moss here from 10 until noon today. Special time for Money Matters. So I already feel like the day's already halfway gone. I've already exercised here in the studio an hour later. An hour makes a big deal. So good morning. We need to talk about when Washington meets Wall Street because there's so much happening in Washington. It's unavoidable to impact Wall Street. I want to take your calls and questions today. So we have the 10 o'clock hour and then the 11 o'clock hour, which is new for Money Matters, at least just for this week and next week. Then we'll be back to our normal 9 to 11 schedule. So different time. Phones are still exactly the same. So the number in the studio, 404-872-0750. I'll take your calls and questions about investment thoughts. Are you making any sort of change? Is it a mutual fund question? We've seen massive inflows in the last week to equity ETFs. Those are exchange-traded funds and equity mutual funds. That means people are putting money back into the stock market, despite the Dow dropping 389 points this week. For the week, the Dow down 1.5%, the S&P 500 down 1.25%, the NASDAQ tech-heavy, biotech-heavy NASDAQ down 1%, and of course, new folks out of Washington. I'll take your calls and questions, whether it has to do with an investment product or decision you're thinking about, or just a financial planning direction. Today, our coverage here starts with Washington, D.C., and how that impacts your stocks. I also want to talk about the retirement gray zone and this timeline approach that we'll get to likely in the 11 o'clock hour. The number, again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB. Talk for all those listening outside of the state of Georgia, Texas, California, the great state of Michigan, who pulled out a win last night in NCAAs, and my home state of Pennsylvania, not to mention the North Carolina Tar Heels. Go Heels. Good morning. Let me just give a quick rundown. You've heard all of these folks out in Washington, but just as a quick reminder, Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, gone. He was there for 406 days. John McKenty, probably don't remember a lot of him. He was a personal aide. He was there for 417 days. Gary Cohn, he was the director of the National Economic Council and the chief economic advisor to President Trump, gone after 411 days. The innocent Hope Hicks, and I've actually communicated with Hope Hicks in the past. This is just a nice woman who meant no harm, probably could cause no harm if she tried, out after 405 days and having to do congressional testimony. Who's next on the list? Rob Porter. He was there for 384 days. He was the White House staff secretary. Amorosa, out of The Apprentice and out of the White House. That after 366 days. Diana Powell, out of the White House. She was the deputy national security advisor. Gone after 358 days. How about Tom Price? Remember him? Secretary of Health and Human Services, out after 232 days. And we can just keep going and going and going. This is a very, very long list. Oh, remember this guy? Steve Bannon, chief strategist and senior counselor to the president, out after 211 days. So I expected so much of this. Those folks and friends of mine that were thinking about going to Washington to be part of the administration after Trump was elected, the conversations that we had about what was going to happen in the first year was, hey, look, I bet you there's going to be a lot of turnover in that first year. You got a new guy who's never been a politician before. He doesn't know exactly how things work in Washington. He's going to bring people in that he thinks are going to work, and the chances of them working are probably low probability in that first year. And that's exactly what we have seen. I think the next year, I would think that there will be a lot more stability after the administration and Trump himself has learned a lot more about the inner workings of Washington. Now, speaking of the inner workings of Washington, there's still an awful lot that goes on. So I think of Washington as this large working farm. There's so much going on. Let's call it 100 acres of activity, and they're growing soybeans, and they're growing, I don't know, tobacco. It doesn't matter what they're doing. They've got horses and pigs and chickens on one end. They're growing some sort of crop on another end. They're raising cattle on the other side. They've got a stream that's powering a saw that's creating finished lumber. Maybe I'm going back a little bit in time, but there's a lot happening on this farm. And I think about when I was a kid, there was this large hornet's nest that would crop up once a year in a, I want to say this is a catalpa tree. And for those of you listening, maybe Walter Reeves from WSB Radio would know, there's a catalpa tree, which are these, a tree with these long banana-like beans that grow. They're like a foot and a half long. And in this catalpa tree, a great hornet nest arose every single season. And my brothers and I would take rocks and throw rocks at this hornet's nest, and we would start 50 yards away and no one would hit the nest, and then we would creep up to 30 yards and then we'd get 10 yards away, and there's just this buzzing hornet's nest. And the closest one to the hornet's nest to try to knock it down, which I don't think we ever did without getting stung, won the game. And Washington, or the White House itself, is that small but so active hornet's nest in the middle of that farm. All of the news is coming out of that house. All of the activity, it seems like, that once they'd covered is coming out of that one hornet's nest. But the real activity on that working farm, the real activity in Washington, D.C., is happening all around and far away from that hornet's nest. And that is the business of lobbying. And that is the business of activity of companies coming to Washington with a specific agenda, knowing exactly what they want their congressman or their congresswoman to do. Because whatever that congresswoman can do has a major impact on the line of business that that company runs. That's the real yeoman's work getting done in Washington. And despite President Trump saying no lobbyists, no more special interests, that hasn't remotely changed one bit. Washington is still this giant working farm, hundreds of acres, and hundreds and thousands of lobbyists working on what the agenda that they want worked on for their specific company that's paying them millions and millions of dollars. And that is the way that business gets done in Washington to this day. So that brings up something we talked about a year ago after we've covered the aerospace and defense industry a great deal here on Money Matters. But we also talked about, we call this the policy opportunity portfolio. And this has been a way for me to track specific events happening in Washington. Because if you can identify a basket of companies that all have something in common that would all, let's say, do well if Democrats won, or a basket of companies that would do well if Republicans won, you can start to track and forecast political outcomes. And that's exactly the genesis of this policy opportunity portfolio, or this basket of companies that in this particular case was defined or is defined by lobbying intensity. How much are they spending? How much time, effort, energy, people, campaigns are they doing as a company to influence policy, to influence a policy that will impact their profits? And that still happens in great significance to this day in Washington. So I this is something that I track. I actually invest in this. I have a big chunk of my retirement money in a strategy that follows lobbying intensity, because it still has a major impact on these companies. And I want to talk about this today and how we measure this lobbying intensity and what it means. So this portfolio has 50 companies. Now, most of these companies are pretty big companies. Some you would have heard of, some are a little bit kind of middle sized, still in the S&P 500. And I rank these companies not to account just for the dollars they spent in Washington, but their PR investments and how they are trying to shape public awareness and all these other efforts to reflect this exceptional effectiveness in lobbying and their lobbying efforts and the potential for huge benefits to earnings. Now, research shows that lobbying activity and lobbying intensity can really have a huge impact on earnings. You can track these companies that are shaping policy, and they're driving the particular industry legislation, and they're furthering any sort of beneficial regulatory process that still helps them. And if you do that and you find those companies, it's tremendous what will happen to the underlying stock. Now, if you're trying to find this ROI or some sort of return on investment metric, it's not as simple as just finding out who's spending the most. So Google, for example, spends about $10 million annually on lobbying. That has a much less impact on a company like Google than it does on a company, let's say a pharmaceutical company like Vertex Pharmaceuticals, let's say, who might spend the same amount. Because Google's this massive company, it's an $800 billion market cap, $90 billion in annual revenue, spending $10 million bucks really is kind of a drop in the bucket for them. But Vertex is a $40 billion company delivering only $2 billion in revenue. Spending the same $10 million in Washington could have a big impact on the laws that are in coordination with how they earn a profit. We want to keep talking about lobbying in Washington. Despite the hornet's nest of activity, the real activity is on other parts of the working farm. We're going to actually cover some of those companies right here. Again, the number in the studio, 404-872-0750. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday, right here on News 95.5 AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Harvard Business Review shows that corporate lobbying efforts can have a major, major impact. This is a Harvard Business Review study. Case study shows that $1 spent on lobbying benefits, or on lobbying activity, in this case it was for tax breaks, returned for the companies involved in those lobbying efforts, $220. $1 ends up as $220 as profit. So it is money well spent for companies in Washington. Very clear that lobbying efforts can help earnings. But the problem here is that generally Wall Street analysts seem to have trouble figuring out when and how it will take place. That's why finding this group of companies is so compelling. Let's go to the phones here. Let's start with Neil on the line. Neil, good morning. How can we help?
Yes. My mother is 87 years old, and my father set up a trust so they have $100,000 in the bank. My father passed away, but it's just sitting there and doing absolutely nothing. And I was wondering, you know, what I could do to invest that for her so she would get an income out of it.
And this is for mom, right, Neil?
Right.
How old is she again?
She'll be 87 in June.
Does she need the income at all, or is she just going to leave it there no matter what?
She receives Social Security, but she has dementia, and so we have to have people in to help with her and everything, so that she doesn't use it all up before she passes away. I was thinking we could set up something so that it would draw some to help with her care.
Exactly. So this is I was talking to a good friend of mine recently about his mom, and I think that whether you're in your 40s or 50s or 60s, we're a generation where a lot of us are going to be helping our parents, particularly as they get much, much older and their money starts to run out. I think that's a prudent thought, is to just keep the money safe. At the very least, Neil, remember that treasuries have started to yield a fair amount, meaning that a year ago you got squat out of a 1 or 2 year treasury. Today you can get over 2% in ultimate safety, right? So think of it anywhere from 2.25% for a 1 or 2 year super short term treasury, totally safe, all the way up to something like a Southern Company where the yield on that stock, much riskier than a treasury, is at 5.25%. So that's your range to generate income. One, you're going to see almost zero fluctuation with a little bit of income. The other, with more fluctuation, but a 5%+ yield. Kind of that's your continuum. Stay tuned. More Money Matters right here at WSB Radio, straight ahead.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. everybody. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. We're on live today from 10 until noon to take your calls and questions today. So much turmoil in Washington this week. So, of course, you've got Rex Tillerson out for the week, the exit of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson out. We have the potential for new tariffs on Chinese goods, another subpoena on the Trump Organization. There's so much happening in the hornet's nest that is the White House. None of this makes Wall Street all that comfortable for the week. The Dow down 1.5%, the S&P down about 1.25%. This coming week, though, we also are hearing from the Federal Reserve, which is most likely, it's not 100% chance, but it is extraordinarily likely that you're going to see the Fed raise interest rates again, or at least for the first time this year, up one from up to the range of 1.5 to 1.75. So we continue to see the Fed saying, hey, the economy's pretty good. It can handle higher interest rates. They don't need to be artificially and historically lower than they've ever been. So we can start normalizing where interest rates are in the world. The last caller that we just talked to said, hey, I have money sitting in cash doing nothing for my mom, and I want it to stay safe, so where do I put it? Well, you don't want it in a money market today, and many money markets are far behind the curve as far as giving you interest. Even though the Federal Reserve has raised interest rates, think about how banks now and investment firms make the spread. If they pay you 0.5% on your money market, but the Federal Reserve is effectively paying them 1.5%, that's how many of these big companies make money. It's this interest rate spread that banks and investment firms can make. So you've got to be proactive with your money. And if you want to keep money still safe, that's fine. If you don't want to invest it in the equity markets or the stock market, just remember that treasuries are now yielding over 2%. And when I say treasuries, I'm not talking about 10-year bonds. I'm not talking about 30-year bonds. So you don't have to lock yourself up here for a half a generation. I'm talking about 1-year bonds or 2-year bonds in the 2 and close to 2.25% range for very, very short term. So, you know, so your commitment is light today in the world that we live in to make at least 2, 2.25%. Nobody's jumping up and down. Nobody's jumping up and down like you got a hole in one. But at least you're getting some productivity now out of your money. We're going to go back to the phones here in just a moment. But I want to continue on and give you with lobbying and what these efforts will do potentially for companies. I just talked about this Harvard Business Study. It says that companies, in one study, they spent $1 to get back $220 in return. So the activity that they effectively pushed for, they got implemented in Washington, the regulation or legislation ultimately led to $220 worth of their own company profits. Very often, companies themselves are way ahead of the rest of the marketplace when it comes to how policy and regulation is going to impact their operations. Think about Amazon right now. I mean, there's no drones flying around except for kids that get these on birthdays, right? But in real life, we know drones will probably be a big part of the economy, the economic picture. I don't know if it's a year from now, 5 years from now, but at some point, companies like Amazon are going to be using drones to drop packages on your front yard. Who do you think cares about how drone activity gets regulated? Is it mom and dad who buy a drone for little Johnny for his birthday? No, they don't care. But think about how Amazon, if they can have the right legislation and the right regulations in place that are in line with what they want to do over the next decade, imagine how profitable that could help or profitable that could be to the core business. However, imagine if the drone legislation says, nope, no drones can come within 200 yards of a house. Well, it's going to make it pretty tough for Amazon to start delivering packages via drone. What are they going to do? Drop it from a parachute 3 football fields away and hope that it navigates to your house? You know what? Honestly, maybe they will. But it'll be a lot easier if regulations come out and say, hey, you can have this kind of drone that with this safety requirements that you can get within 20 feet of a house, and then you can start dropping packages on people's doorsteps. Just imagine how massive that business opportunity could be as long as the legislation is in their favor. And just imagine how much revenue that could kill if the legislation goes against them. See how important legislation can be towards companies, whether it's a dollar spent equals $22 out the other side or a dollar spent equals $1,000 out the other side. It's case by case. But companies are the ones that know how to sniff this out. So as I continue on with this theme of where Washington meets Wall Street, if you go back and look at what Big Tobacco did, even is a good example back in the mid 2000s. These are companies, of course, that you know that were struck with these waves of class action lawsuits. These tobacco companies actually pushed for more regulation and more reform, recognizing that the dollar impact that they could get out of that, so the dollar impact to their advertising and operations would be less than the lawsuit protection afforded by new regulation. So limiting this advertising visibility that was part of their lobby that they agreed to, plus new taxation schemes for the industry, became barriers to entry for new potential competitors for them. So you can look at it both ways. You could say, look, I want this legislation to go so that it helps this new line of business, or legislation that could say, hey, you know what, we're gonna have to concede over here, but if this new regulation can block other competitors for coming in, then all the better for our business over time. And that's what exactly you can see it in the results. If you look at the stocks that have done this well and have done this right, and this is a basket of companies I've followed for many years. So this has been a strategy that has been easy to track since 2009, so April of 2009. So it's kind of as the market started to recover, this went live. And it's outperformed the S&P 500 by almost 3.5% per annum per year. So 3 to 4% per year on average since it started. So since inception, over 20% versus the S&P 500 under 17%. And on a year-to-year-to-year basis, so trying to match what the general market has done versus what this policy opportunity basket has done, eclipsed the S&P 500 in 8 out of the last 9 years. So there is, now they've even back-tested this, and this the research folks that I work with on this, that have developed a way to find ROI for lobbying intensity effectively, have had these baskets all the way back to 2002. And the results all the way back from 2002, even though this wasn't live, are still continue to outpace the general marketplace. So what does this mean and why do I bring it up? I bring it up in a week where there's just, again, a hornet's nest just of activity, most of it perceived as negative, at least by the media, and most Americans. You don't want to see your White House in a constant state of flux. So nobody's excited about Rex Tillerson, which I think it's funny where you get a guy like Gary Cohn who's out. And who knows what Gary Cohn's worth? Probably $100 million. Who knows what Rex Tillerson, who was the CEO or chairman of Exxon for how many years? You know, it's funny to me because this is a guy who is not used to taking direction. Again, probably worth $100 million, $50 million. At some point, he's probably looking at day 400 saying, look, I don't need to take this anymore. I don't want this, you know, static between me and the president. It's just not worth it. I can go be on a beach somewhere for all I care. And that's what's happened. So I think we're going to get a year over the next 12 months. I have a feeling things are going to start to calm down as far as turnover. But it also means that regardless of what's happened in Washington and regardless of which party even controls the White House and what party controls Congress, the factors that determine a company's inclusion in this particular basket remain unaffected because lobbyists haven't gone anywhere. They're not going anywhere. It's too big of an economy. It's too big of this working farm that is the massive state of Washington, D.C. and Washington politics. And it's not going anywhere. It's not going away. So I want you to keep an eye on this. This is something that I have spent a whole lot of time with from an investment perspective. Again, the way I do this is I have 50 stocks in the S&P 500. I rebalance it once every quarter, so four times a year. Pretty simple to make sure that the 50 stocks that are in that basket are all companies that are at that particular time, and it may be a 1 year period that they last, maybe a 3 or 4 year period that they last. But if a company is on a long-term campaign saying, hey, we believe that if we get legislation right, and legislation is in coordination or in the Washington jet stream, that it's going to be a big deal for our business, it's going to be a big deal for our company, and ultimately that means good things typically for how our stock reacts. So again, lobbying intensity, lobbying basket, policy opportunity portfolio, still working despite, and this is over a year of Trump being in office, saying he's going to get rid of lobbying. Lobbying isn't going anywhere at all. Let's go to the phones here. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to a couple of calls here. Let's go to Kim, who joins us from Atlanta. Kim, what's going on? How can I help?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I want to pick your brain and just get your opinion on the Larry Kudlow replacing Gary Cohn, because he'll obviously have the president's ear. And hopefully he can talk them out of the tariffs. But also, in a way, even though he won't be an official lobbyist, he's going to have a lot of contact with Congress on economic policy. I think it's a great decision.
It's hard, yeah, Kim. So it's hard not to love Larry Kudlow. Lawrence Kudlow has been, I would say, in my life for so long, because he's been one of the most sensible, let's call it, commentators on CNBC since I can remember. Really, he started back on, so he was the chief economist at Bear Stearns, and everybody knows that he ran into an addiction problem. There was a period of time in his life where he was effectively addicted to cocaine. He's been very, very he's been very straightforward about this, been very open about it. And he went to, it was a very dark period in his life. Obviously a giant stressor on his business career and his wife and his marriage. And he got through it. He lost his job and got through it, but is known as a brilliant economist all the way back into the 70s. Now, he was kind of really a Democrat when in his very early years, but he had a lot of Washington experience in the Reagan administration. And eventually, like I think a lot of folks, as they grow up, maybe when they're young, they might be Democratic, and as they get a little bit older, and they might turn Republican. I've seen that happen thousands of times. But there's no changing that he's a brilliant economist. And now for the last 15, 18 years, been a reasonable voice of conservative economic policy and has been unwavered in that and very out front in writing and commentating and very well respected. And I think that I don't know of a better choice, and particularly for someone in this role, this economic advisory role that's also very public on television and very public trying to message what the president really wants to do, which I think is, especially for economics, this is a wonderful choice. And I'm excited about it. I love Larry Kudlow. 404-872-0750. More Money Matters straight ahead.
Atlanta's 24-hour news button is News 95.5 and AM 750.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Wes Moss here today from 10 until noon. So coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, an article that we wrote for ClarkHoward.com, how happy retirees can spend $82,770 in retirement without having millions and millions of dollars in the bank. We're going to go right to the phones here. Carl joins us on the line from Atlanta. Carl, good morning. How can we help?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
It's a two-part question. Okay, on some of your sister stations, I've been listening to money advice shows, and they say My first question is, I think I have between $30,000 and $40,000 in a traditional IRA. Okay. I am told on these radio shows that this is the best time to take the tax hit to switch it all to a Roth IRA. I have some very few dollars in a Roth IRA. Can you tell me what the tax is and what the equation would be so I could figure out how much? And the second part of the question is, at the end of this year, would that be considered earned income transferring from a traditional to a Roth?
Yes. The answer is yes. Whenever you do one of these conversions, it is counted and added to your adjusted gross income. So the reality here for anybody to say that this is a good time is really misguided, because it really depends, Carl, on your particular income scenario. So if you were to tell me that you are retired, or you're taking a hiatus, or you have a 6-month period of time where you're not working and your income is low, I would say this would be a good time for Carl to do a Roth conversion. It's a very individual decision, and it's based on how much other income you have in that year and how much you're going to convert, because every dollar you convert adds to your overall adjusted gross income, like a paycheck. Now, if you were to convert a few thousand dollars, not a big deal. It's not going to impact your tax bracket. You're going to convert $100,000. It's a huge deal, because it can take your income up right through 2, 3, 4 brackets higher than what it ordinarily would be. So if you're in the 20% bracket, you convert $300,000, it'll immediately hit you into the 37% federal tax bracket, and you're going to pay a ton of taxes. And oh, by the way, the government loves Roth conversions, because they get a ton of tax revenue today. So the calculation, there's two ways to look at it. One, taxes today versus taxes tomorrow, Carl. If you are, and with the additional amount you want to convert, is going to keep you in the same tax bracket, you'll be in the same tax bracket or higher. So today you're in the 20% tax bracket, in the future you're going to be 20-25% tax bracket, then the Roth conversion makes a lot of sense. If you're going to be in the same tax bracket in the future or lower, then why would you want to convert a Roth at 35% when you're going to be in the 15 bracket in the future? You're going to pay 35% to save 15. The bottom line here is there's Roth conversion calculators online. The one I use is at Charles Schwab. So Google Schwab Roth conversion calculator, and it will do the math for you, my friend. You'll listen to Money Matters in the 11 o'clock hour, how to spend $82,770, and then why you need to prepare for the retirement gray zone right here with me, Wes Moss, on Money Matters, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.